having been there a few times as a delegate, the lobby.
Hang on a second. Well, you've kept this completely buried forever.
Well, only ever as an underage delegate.
So, well, what does an underage delegate mean?
Someone that's not 60.
Yeah, exactly.
OTB AM. Live. Weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Thank you, Mark Cagney. It's Richie McCormack here with you until 10 p.m. tonight. A busy Off the Ball on the way for you between now and then. We'll have a chance to sit down and chat with the two-time All-Ireland winning football manager with Down, Pete McGrath. He'll join us on the line just after 8 o'clock tonight. And as the managerial tumult continues, we will ask Guillaume Balaguer just what exactly is going on at Barcelona and who we can expect to replace Ronald Koeman, who was sacked last night after a defeat to Rayo Vallecano. Also joining us on the football show tonight, Miguel Delaney will look ahead to this weekend's meeting of Tottenham and Manchester United in the Premier League, which, let's face it, features two managers that aren't well wanted at their particular clubs at this moment in time. Nuno Espirito Santo, of course, at White Hart Lane, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at United. Plus, it being a Thursday night, we'll have our regular check-in with John Giles and see what he made of last Sunday's game at Old Trafford. Delighted to say I'm joined in studio for the newsroom by Anne-Marie Donlan. Anne-Marie, back in the studio. And also joining us on the line from Casa del Molloy is the one and only Joe Molloy. Joe, you're welcome to the show.
Folks, how are we doing?
Good, good, good. Before we move on and talk about things in the news, it's kind of, we're talking to Pete McGrath later on, Joe, on the show. It's difficult to kind of imagine the situation that he found himself in 1991, trying to win a first All-Ireland with Down in umpteen years, but also like looking back on what Ulster football was then versus what it is now, whereby it's the decision maker, I guess, in all talk of football championship proposals going forward, because it's the only real football championship that you'd look forward to from beginning to end. Whereas while it might have been a decent football championship back then, it was producing All-Ireland champions so very rarely. Like, it was 86 before... there was 5 years between All-Ireland finalists from Ulster between 86 and 91, and then you had to go back to 1977, I think it was, before that again, before you had another finalist from an Ulster county. It was just a barren wasteland in terms of football until Pete McGrath came along and kind of set the blue touch paper for Ulster football.
Yeah, true. Just another reason the 90s were the best. It was amazing. Like, I often remember hearing from people who were there who would say Down against Derry in 94, and Derry obviously being the defending All-Ireland champions, and Down not so far off 91, was maybe the greatest game of the decade. Yeah. In the championship and beyond, like, absolutely iconic, extraordinary sunny day. Conor Deegan, who I got to know in later years and played a bit of golf with, and he was on the golf podcast with us and all the rest, played in those kind of games, and he would tell you brilliant stories about them, you know. So yeah, it was extraordinary time in Ulster, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely magical when you consider they had Down kind of light everything up in 91, and then it just kept going. Like, yeah. I guess they gave the other counties inspiration, as it were. You know, obviously the first two to really benefit from that were Donegal and then Derry, and then following on from all of that, you had Tyrone and Armagh. Like, if you're a Fermanagh or Monaghan supporter on the outside looking in, you're kind of almost feeling a little bit left out.
Absolutely. And I think the whole country was kind of happy to see it. It was good to see Ulster flourish, and they were all quite likeable teams, I think, in their own ways.
Yeah, they all had... Their forward lines always stuck out to me, particularly the Down one, and particularly because... Yeah, like being a Meath supporter in 91 and having been to a tranche of those games during that championship, like, it was a difficult thing to, like, having Pete McGrath on the show tonight, it's kind of like bittersweet for any kind of Meath supporter, because, like, an incredible manager, but you kind of think of what Meath had been through during that summer against Dublin, that the narrative was that this was going to be their All-Ireland, and Down just turned up and said no, your grand thanks. Mickey Linden and James McCartan being part of that forward line said no, and then the narrative around 94 was that the All-Ireland Championship needs Dublin to win in All-Ireland, because, you know, what is the All-Ireland Championship without a successful and strong Dublin team? And you contrast that to the situation we find ourselves in today, whereby Dublin are the only show in town almost, and you kind of wish they would go away. I mean, that's all within, you know, recent enough memory. It might be 25 years ago, 26, 27 years ago, but it's still recent enough memory that you can kind of go back and think how different the lie of the land was.
No, very much so. Ah, Mickey Linden. Now we're talking. Yeah. Now we are talking. Still playing football into his 50s and kicking points into his 50s. And I think you've caught me in the hop here. I didn't know we were going to talk about this at the start, but isn't there something extraordinary with Linden whereby he's winning international sprinting events for over 50s or over 60s? I'm pretty sure there is.
That's going to be a swift Google on my behalf there. While I Google that, we will begin into the news round, which of course is brought to you with thanks to Gillette. Put your best face forward, and we're starting with matters in Catalonia, Marie.
Yeah, and club legend Xavi has reportedly accepted an offer from Barcelona to become their head coach. That's after they sacked Ronald Koeman last night. The deal is expected to be confirmed once an agreement is reached to terminate his contract at Al Sadd, where he is in Qatar at the moment. Sergei Barjuan is in charge at the moment. The former defender, who has been in charge of Barca B, took the reins today. That's on an interim basis. The club sit ninth in La Liga. They've lost their last three games. That included a 2-1 defeat at home to Real Madrid on Sunday. Xavi came through Barcelona's academy. He made 767 appearances for the club. He's now 41 years of age. He won 8 La Liga titles while he was there. The Champions League 4 times. That was between his debut in 98 and 2015 when he departed.
Joe, Xavi gets the chance to play saviour here. He's going to have a hell of a job on his hands, but you kind of figure he will be given more time than Ronald Koeman was ever going to be given.
Well, it'll be a popular choice. Yeah. It is amazing. I mean, if I was Xavi or advising him, I'd say, here, let's hang on a few years. This job is yours eventually. This job is yours in waiting. To rush in now and have a really tough 2, 3, 4 years, which seems inevitable, is, I don't know, ill-advised maybe. He's still only 41. I mean, his playing career is just insane. I was reminding myself of it there. La Liga 8 times, Champions League 4 times, 27 trophies. He's kind of like Sir Alex Ferguson here, Xavi, only he did it playing, which is nuts. I don't know. I think this is risky. I suspect Xavi, who was never shy about talking about the Barcelona way as if everybody else and all other clubs were slightly backward. I think there was an arrogance about Xavi, the way he would talk about Barcelona. I suspect he may have a touch too much faith in the Barcelona way and think that he's going to go back and pluck a couple of youngsters from Masia and put together a brilliant team again. I suspect he may be in for a rude awakening about how badly things are at that club now, to be honest.
Yeah, by all accounts, like, La Masia isn't as fecund a land as it once was, producing the likes of himself and Sergi Busquets and all these kind of players. Like, it's just different. Like, the club is vastly
not
different, you know.
Simon Cooper, whose book I think I know you're reading as well at the moment, I mean, yeah, he has said, and I think he's right, that was just, as good as La Masia might be, that's a freak. That's a once in a couple of generation collection of players to come through. That's class of 92 stuff. That will not happen again. So, yeah, I think a bit of humility for Xavi mightn't be the end of the world, you know. I think I won't be crying tears either, in a way. I thought there was an arrogance about him, as brilliant as he is in so many ways. By the way, on Mickey Linden, can I just mention?
Go on.
So Mickey Linden took up athletics in his 40s, and he represented Ireland at the World Masters Athletics Championships. This was after he'd won a couple of 60-meter titles, had broken the Irish record. So he certainly competed at the World Championships for 50 to 55-year-olds. And hell, he may still be going, but there you go. So he was competing on the international stage representing Ireland.
I'm sure Pete can probably take a bit of credit for all that, because I was looking back in his Laker Gale between doing prep for the interview, and like, he used to put that down team through hell in terms of their physical preparation. Like, they used to go up and run on the sides of mountains and all this kind of stuff, and the miles that they would put on their legs before they enter into a league and a championship kind of format was absolutely incredible. And to think Lyndon's still out there running his legs off into his 50s is quite incredible. I'd want to do, I'd be putting the trotters up, I'd be doing nothing.
How does he have any cartilage left, I wonder? They all went through hell in the 90s. That's all any of these teams say. The Clare lads went through hell under Lochnan. The Mayo lads, running up the sand dunes of Enniscrone, they all went through hell. That seemed to be a prerequisite in the 90s. We're going through hell.
Yeah, and more of it. I'd say, you know, more teams could stand to just run up and down sand dunes for the crack to prepare themselves for championship. That's what real football men are made of. concussion news and injury news coming out of Leinster today, Anne-Marie.
Yeah, Leinster and Ireland back row Caelan Dorris says he's happy that he prioritised his long-term health when making decisions around playing. The former Ireland under-20 captain missed the first half of this year. That was following two in-game concussions within a 12-month period. And during this time, he sought specialist advice on the issue. And then he sat out the Six Nations, which ended his chances of touring with the British and Irish Lions over the summer. He's in the Irish squad, though, for their autumn internationals that are upcoming against Japan, New Zealand and Argentina. They take place next month. Speaking to Will O'Callaghan, he says the cautious approach has benefited him.
It was pretty challenging period in a way. Obviously, with the Lions at the end of the season and the Six Nations being crucial in wanting to have a crack at that. So it was kind of a big decision in getting fully checked out. But yeah, I'm glad I did. And the medical staff were great and very accommodating in getting me checked out by some of the best people around. So I'm glad to have the full battery of tests and full baselines now. And I can always go back and compare in the future if there's worries again or if I get another knock. But I think, yeah, initially it was sort of unknown how long I was going to be out for. And we're kind of in constant communication with a specialist over in Birmingham. And it was sort of play it by ear a little bit. I was doing a return to contact, a graduated return with Hugh Hogan, where we sort of started off maybe 40 or 50% hitting the bag and gradually built back up to try and increase my threshold around contact. So it was kind of gauging off how I was going with that. And in the end, we sort of stayed on the safe side and took a little bit longer time, which meant obviously missing La Rochelle and the rest of the Six Nations. But yeah, no, I'm glad I did. It was probably the prudent decision. And yeah, I'm feeling good now.
Talk of a takeover at West Ham.
Yeah, there is. It's believed that a Czech-based billionaire is close to agreeing the purchase of a big stake in West Ham United, and then that could eventually lead to a full takeover. It's believed Sparta Prague owner Daniel Kretinsky is in advanced talks to acquire 27% of the club. West Ham knocked Manchester City out of the Carabao Cup last night. They beat them 5-3 on penalties. They're fourth in the Premier League as well, going really well, and they've 3 wins from 3 so far in the group stages of the Europa League.
West Ham have turned into one of these feel-good stories, and you kind of, like, as you know, buoyant as they might be with news of a prospective rich new owner, or at least partial owner, the worry from their point of view would be that this kind of upsets the apple cart a little bit and becomes a little bit of a distraction. I'll hope that's not the case.
Yeah, he's known as the Czech Sphinx, I was reading, for his inscrutable business manner, interestingly. So there you go. He's made lots of good investments and he was a lawyer. Do you mind if I just go back to the Caelan Dorris story for a moment? Because I think it's a really important one and it's really significant that he's talking so openly about this. I think he has done his sport a real service. I'm sure there are some within the echelons of rugby who don't love him talking like this, because there are parents who will read this interview, and this was the most read interview on pretty much all publications that I could see across the day. And you know what mothers and fathers and parents will be thinking, and they'll be thinking, my child is not going near a rugby pitch, when they read these kind of stories. But I think it's great that Dorris is being so open and honest. I think it's brilliant that he stepped back, because it would have been easy to ignore the problem. And so it's good that the message has got through to younger players that they shouldn't ignore the problem. And you know, he was talking about being hyper, almost paranoid when you're forgetting somebody's name. Like, I was thinking, Anne-Marie, last night I forgot Jack McCaffrey's name, and you were like, McCaffrey, and I was like, God, McCaffrey. Now, if I'd taken several concussive knocks to the head, I'm sure I'd be freaked out by that. So he was saying, well, what's what here? And he did the right thing. He got checked out and his initial cognitive tests were down on where they should be. And when he's talking about having some speech issues at 22, that's very, very scary. And the tests show he was down on his baseline and that the baseline has come back up. So really, it was down to those knocks against Treviso and Scotland. And there was another one in Irish camp in a training match. So, look, that's very scary and that's very serious. And he seems to have done the right thing. But it does highlight the issues with the sport. And we're watching them in real time. And the other interesting thing in that interview is he's now going to wear a protective, I guess you'd call it a device, but some layer around his head. And again, the verdict is out on that. So like, Olympic boxing athletes no longer wear those head protectors because studies have shown they offer no protection to concussive blows. Whereas Dorris has said he's seen other evidence and that a layer of foam around his head will do no harm. So he's going to try it for a while and see how he goes. And that would be interesting. But either way, I'd commend him, because, like I said, I don't think everybody in rugby will love this being the big story today, but he's spoken very honestly and he's done the right thing in stepping back. So I think it's a really important story, and I think good on him.
They're in a really tricky spot, people who oversee rugby, because the one thing that we've seen about them in terms of wanting to spread the game, let's say, into territories where it wasn't necessarily the biggest thing in the world, and I guess the United States pitch to host both World Cups as part of that, they obviously want to alter the competitions to make them more attractive. But the thing that's going to make the game more attractive to participants is it not having a long-term impact on their cognitive abilities, which seems to be just a consistent cloud that hovers over it at the minute. And there's no easy fix to make that abate, really.
You've summed it up. That is the very, very, very tricky situation facing the sport. There is no easy fix here. You can't disentangle the physicality from it. Yeah. So, I don't know.
If Daniel Kretinsky is called the Czech, was it the Czech Sphinx?
Yes.
What's the Joe Malloy nickname?
I'll come back to you on that. I'll text you.
Okay, fair enough. That's a little bit of intrigue. We've had a couple of texts in as well. 53106, if you want to get in contact with us tonight, add off the ball on Twitter, of course. Rather than being a Fergie figure at Barcelona, is appointing Xavi not the Barca equivalent of United appointing Ole? A sentimental appointment for an inexperienced manager from Sean. Anne-Marie?
Yeah, that's what I automatically, my head went to the disaster that we're seeing at United, and there's no place for sentimentality, and it's probably not going to work out for Ollie, and you just fear that it could be the same with Xavi.
Yeah, Cahill as well as texted us on the subject of great days for Ulster football as well. I had holiday mates from Derry that I'd meet every year in Mayo. The excitement around that 93 final was ridiculous, says Cahill. But as we talk about looking back in the past, I guess Niamh McCarthy is doing the same as well this evening, Anne-Marie.
Yeah, the 2016 Paralympic silver medalist Niamh McCarthy called time on her career today, announcing her retirement. The Cork native, who competed in the discus competition, was crowned European champion on two separate occasions. She also won silver at the World Championships in 2017.
And talk of a cash influx to Galway, as if they didn't need any more boosts after appointing Henry Shefflin last week.
Yeah, Galway are set to provide strong financial backing to new senior hurling manager Henry Shefflin. The 10-time All-Ireland winner with Kilkenny was appointed by Galway County Board last week. There has been much controversy regarding Galway GAA's finances over the last number of years, and their hurling board chairman, Paul Bellew, joined OTBA this morning, and he said the resources are there.
We have had financial issues, we've had governance issues. That sometimes gets tied in with resource, and I think that's as good a time anyway to set the record straight, and I won't be too popular for doing this, and I wasn't too popular probably in my own county board when I did it, but you know, this people will laugh at this, and I'm waiting for the reaction later on today. Galway hurlers are probably in the top two resource squads in the country. Now, it's not too often that's said, and most people don't believe it, but I spent a lot of time the last few weeks talking to managers, ex-managers, other county board officials in other counties. I've had some of the worst 3 weeks of my life, but two of the best three as well. The hurling public would talk to me. We are somewhere in the region of 20% over most teams in what we make available and supply to get our team to an All-Ireland final. We consistently have backroom teams in excess of 20 people. Our budget to get to an All-Ireland is over 700k, if needed to be. And that's a budget. It's a target. It's not meant to be spent if it doesn't have to be. But it's there. Our players are exceptionally well looked after, which they will all testify to. The relationship between, I can speak from the hurling committee side, and the players is as good a relationship as I've ever been involved in from a work point of view or a amateur point of view. And, you know, again, people might be shocked at hearing some of that, but that is the facts. And as I said, just because there's debt issues and COVID, you would have a cash flow issues and huge challenges, we remain one of the best resource squads in the country.
I don't think that would be a great surprise to Henry Shefflin. I imagine that was probably a convincing factor, Joe, in trying to get him on board.
Yeah. I just found myself thinking, who's number one if he says they're number two?
In terms of hurling?
Limerick?
Limerick.
Limerick. It has to be Limerick. So then you're kind of wondering.
700,000, not massive. Yeah. I was surprised by that. And the casual nature, it's just dropped in there.
And
if they're getting 700,000, are the footballers getting that?
Well, don't say it like they're getting paid, Anne-Marie.
No, but I'm...
That would be wrong.
If the budget for the hurlers is 700,000, yeah, I'd be surprised if the budget for Galway footballers is anything close to that.
I want to see, like, I'm suddenly intrigued now that he's kind of put that thought in my head of the league table of the best and worst funded hurling teams, because clearly Limerick are number one. If they're number two, you're figuring Kilkenny number three. They've got a lot of money behind them in terms of sponsorships, etc. And yeah, then after that,
Wexford.
Interesting. Clare, where did Clare land in all this? Cork,
yeah.
Big questions to answer. One final story on Joey Barton. His mouth getting him in trouble yet again, Anne-Marie.
Yeah, the Bristol Rovers manager Joey Barton apologised today. That was after he compared a player's performance to the Holocaust at the weekend. They lost 3-1 to Newport County, that was in League 2 on Saturday. In a post-match interview with a group of reporters, he said that a player had a Holocaust. And speaking to BBC Radio Bristol today, he said he meant no offence by it and that he hopes to use better analogies in the future.
Kind of par for the course for Joey Barton, really, Joe, isn't it?
I think he's an intelligent fella. I'm surprised he said that publicly. Like, I think that's in the football lexicon, and that's, I'd say Joey Barton grew up in an era where that was said about players all the time.
Is it though?
But I'd say it is. I mean, obviously the influx of foreign players, it wouldn't be used as much. I would think, you know, and we've seen even, and it's amazing, we've seen like pundits use other phrases about defenders who've been badly beaten, which got them into hot water as recently as a couple of years ago on Match of the Day and stuff. Mm. So I'd say it's one of those things that's said routinely in football. I don't know how routinely. It's said a lot in football, probably not questioned that much. And so it's never been stamped out. Like, I doubt the dressing room is a place where players are saying, well, you shouldn't use that phrase. I wouldn't think football is quite there. And so, but I'm surprised Barton used it publicly, or, you know, let it slip out almost in that way. Obviously, it's a ridiculous thing to be saying about football performance. Yeah.
It's a strange one, all right. That is it for the news, Anne-Marie. Thank you so much. Thanks, for coming Rich. In. Joe as well. We'll let you. I'm looking forward to that text, by the way, that reveals the Joe.
Why can't you say it on air, Joe?
The Selbridge Sphinx.
I mean, I don't know. What is my nickname? I don't know.
Well, that's for you to tell us, Joe. You know,
that's
for you to reveal. This is going to become a wonderful point of intrigue for the rest of the show. I might just leave it dangling until 10 o'clock. You know, give people a reason to keep listening in.
Having been there a few times as a delegate, the lot.
Hang on a second. Well, you've kept this completely buried forever.
Well, only ever as an underage delegate.
So, what does an underage delegate mean?
Someone that's not 60.
Yeah, exactly.
OTB AM. Live. Weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.